The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the one and only Joe DeFalco, the owner and creator of FSW Future Stars of Wrestling here in Las Vegas. How you doing today, Joe?
Getting through. We had a all-women's show last night, and we crowned a new women's champion. So,
very deserving, too. Maserati, for fans who saw the pay-per-view last night, whether you're there in person or you did buy it on Fight TV. You talked about when you look at wrestlers, and I'm not going to say women wrestlers. I'm going to say when you look at wrestlers, and how far she's come in her career, man. I'm just so happy for her, and happy for you as well, because right after Lacey Ryan, who's a great champ, you got Maserati, who's going to be a great champ, and who knows what the future holds for Lacey.
You know, who knows? People know. She knows.
She does know, I would assume. I hope. but overall, the card was a very solid card and great show, man. Good all-around production. And were you happy with...
Yeah, was I happy? Yeah, it was pretty good. You know, it was the first one we've done in a long time. Gallo knows MK really well, and he gets... MK is very passionate about stuff, and... You know, he always likes to be involved, and, you know, he got Estralita from CMLL to come in because he wanted to work with her. And, you know, good thing about MK, money's no object. So
he wants something.
Well,
we had Katarina there. So it was, a different influx for the Vegas wrestling fans. You know, yeah, sure, they saw Sandra Moon and they saw Maserati and Lacey. But they saw some new talent. They saw a couple of girls that were really good out of OVW, Haley James and Joseline Navarro.
Yeah.
And then we had SoCal Crew with Lila Doom, who's always entertaining, and CC Chanel. And we also had a couple of our younger girls and Bryn Thorne out of Arizona, who, you know, she's one who seems to go out on her own. And, you know, she showed up a few weeks ago, just drove down by herself. And it was like, hey, I'm here if you need me. So we kind of put her in, and she's improved a lot over, yep. You know, she had a show a couple years ago with us where, you know, she really shit the bed. And, you know, again, she claimed, you know, how she was very, very nervous, which is understandable wrestling for FSW, you know, compared to wrestling those rinky dink companies in Arizona, you know?
Well, you know, that brings us here to our guest of honor. Gallo, you've been around wrestling. Tonight, and we're recording this on a Saturday. Tonight, Navajo Warrior has his 30th anniversary show. You're not too far behind him.
My 20th month ago.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's how crazy is it that... You know, you've been around this business for such a long time, and now you're getting to celebrate Steve and all his accomplishments. When you started, did you see yourself as someone who wanted to make it so you hung around the guys who had the good influence? Was Navajo one of those people that you saw that if I stick with this guy, I will learn the ropes?
Well, when I started, it was a completely different landscape compared to what it is today. And I mean, even more so, not just the wrestling scene in general. I mean, the fact that Arizona had no wrestling scene.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know about independent wrestling at all until I was like 20 years old. I wound up meeting someone down here because I was, once I found out about indie wrestling, I actually went and it was weird. I found out about it and I started really looking for schools, and I was getting ready to go to like Heartland Wrestling.
Okay.
I was going to go out there, and I wound up answering an ad out here, you know, that led me to wound up eventually meeting Nav and them. So I didn't actually, the thing was, is I wound up being lucky enough to meet Navajo, because originally I did meet a group that wound up, they were a bunch of shitbags. But when I finally met Nav and I actually got trained correctly a year later, I got lucky enough to fall into him because there was no wrestling out here. If I could have met anybody in the world,
right?
And I met Nav, and he had just finished training Knox a year before that, right. So it was Nav and Knox, and he had just started training Hollywood, who started I think like a month before I did, and so when I got brought in, it wasn't so much of a, I didn't really have any other option, but at the same time it was good because I didn't have any other option. I got forced into that situation, and I wound up being forced into with a good guy, you know, who, you know, he and I have had our ups and downs over the last 20 years, but
sure,
I gotta
the
say
Gallo had ups and downs with, you know what I mean.
Had a very volatile career.
Well, you know, but speaking of that, Joe, what was your first memories of meeting Gallo, man? How long ago was it for you?
It had to be at least 20 years ago, because as we've talked about the early stages of me involved with wrestling, we put together a company called Vegas Extreme. And at the time, we were trying to get information, and somehow somebody led me to Navajo Warrior. So I hit up Navajo, and then in the process, we were getting ready to do our very first show at Rush's little facility, or his UWF, whatever you want to call it. So we had to put together a roster. Rush's kids were kids, you know what I mean? It was right. Like Kenny King was there, Snuka Jr. was there. So we were going to kind of base the company around them. Then we talked with Navajo, and the only reason we had Gallo was because we needed a pretty boy back then, and that's when
I definitely couldn't wrestle.
Yeah, so we had so Navajo and Gallo were on the card, and they ended up wrestling two local guys who actually went on to be developmental in WWE, the Riggs brothers, and I'll always remember the match because Navajo broke his leg in the ring during the match.
Now, really bad.
Wow.
So for Vegas Extreme, we had we were trying to bring in whatever talent we could. So through APW and the Jack Slammy guy, we had connections with Mike Modest and his company, which was Pro Wrestling Iron after he left APW. So we had Bison Smith and a guy, Bart Blackson, and a couple guys from there. And whether it was the first show or the second show, we had some SoCal guys that were like Disco Machine and Excalibur, you know, wrestling on the show. But the best part about the match was it was the Riggs brothers versus Gallo and Nav. Nav broke his, I guess, a bone in his leg. So he was on the outside. And one of the guys who used to work with APW, who was involved with us, Boom Boom Kamini, decided to come out and basically jump on the apron and be Gallo's tag team partner. And somehow the 12-minute match probably went 20 minutes, and Gallo refused to tag in Boom Boom Kamini the entire time. So Gallo just wrestled the match, and Boom Boom sat on the entire on the outside the entire match.
You know what's worse? Is I was trying to go home that whole time.
Oh, my God.
Well, I remember that, yeah. That was a bad break, man. You don't often see many people take a bump and their foot stays stuck to the mat and their entire rest of their body hit the ground.
Jesus.
Yeah, that was
Oh,
and that
my
was
God.
That was like when we were like 6 months out from going to Japan, or I think it was, or something like that. Where
it was well worth the payday.
We were getting ready to do some big show, and Nav had to get his foot in a cast for like 8 weeks. It was great.
What was a payday like that on those early shows, Joe? Was it, $25 and a sandwich?
No, it was more than $25, but let's say it was far less than three digits.
Understandable. And Gallo, at that time too, I mean, were you wrestling at that point to basically just continue getting experience? Because I mean, you're still a little green, right?
At that point, I think I was probably, if I remember correctly, I was probably a year and a half in at that point. Because I think that was probably about 2001 or two, early 2000. I think it was about 2001.
2001, I think.
So I was still in my like first 2 years, and I was green as grass. And like, I was real good at taking that heat and reaching for that hot tag, brother. I was real good at that. I'd take the heat better than anybody. I did that for years. But I was really just trying to get experience at that time. And I was roading with Nav at that time, though. Like, I was getting a lot because, like I said, the scene was a little bit different. And there was a lot of people wanting to book the Indian tag team, the Native tag team. Like, we were doing Native Blood at that time. And we were getting booked every weekend, 2-3 times a weekend, every weekend. All the time we were gone, and it was a good learning experience going to places like Joe's and Florida Championship and stuff like that.
Yeah. So. And do you have any recollections of your first thoughts on meeting Joe DeFalco?
That time I remembered meeting him, but it was kind of overshadowed by the fact that Nav snapped his leg.
Yeah.
And then that led to an interesting time at the hospital for hours. You ever wheeled in a 280-pound guy dressed in Native American fight wear with face paint on and a boot and a swollen ankle? It's real interesting. Trying to explain when he's putting in his insurance that we were just playing football or something, you know? Like, so they don't find out he's wrestling. But, sorry, it was just a Village People reunion. He fell off the stage. I don't know. But, and then we got pulled over on the way home, and the cop sees Nav in the back. So that experience, I remembered meeting him, but it was kind of overshadowed. And the main thing that I really remember was when he started FSW, and we all, because after that, I think after that UWF closed down, Joe, there wasn't really much going on in Vegas because it was so commissioned, right?
No, there was absolutely nothing. And then in 2009, we got word because of the UFC's popularity that they decommissioned wrestling. And so we went back to the well in 2009. And at that point, Derek Nykirk, who used to wrestle in Heartland, was going back to Arizona. And that was how I hooked him up with Navajo Warrior, because he was going to Phoenix early on. And then him and Mike Knox became best buddies. So, you know, at that point we had, so Gallo is actually a true FSW original, because he worked that first show at the SWAT meet, and he wrestled Kenny King in the first round of the heavyweight champion tournament. Derek Nykirk worked there with Gallo's best friend and Nykirk's mentee, I guess, Tyson Tyler.
Oh, yeah. That's
still tight to this day, from what I hear.
Partner, buddy, that's your business partner.
That's right.
Yeah, vice president of operations. That's right, right?
Running the show. Never got paid, but ran some good shows with his money. So I guess you could say I did all right out of the deal. Didn't cost me anything.
A true worker.
Yeah, you know.
That was that. I remember that show. Yeah, the sweat box. I lost 5 pounds in that bad locker room.
We've talked with, you know, many of people now who have experienced that. And I know you've had so many different places you've been over the years. How did that rank in terms of the worst, overall conditions of heat? Was that right up there?
There's only one other one that was worse.
Wow.
And it was in Southern California a couple years ago. And it was for this guy I know named Fabian's company. And we were upstairs in this attic at this VWF hall.
Oh, Jesus.
I can honestly say, I remember commenting up there that this is worse than the FSW show. But up until that point, that FSW show took the cake because it was so hot back there. It was so hot. Oh, my God. Like, you walk out to the ring and normally, like, you're like, oh, man, it's hot out here wrestling. Oh, no, you walked out there and it felt like 20 degrees cooler right off the bat. It was great.
Wow.
I didn't want to go back.
Wow. Joe, what were your thoughts of in terms of you worked with Gallo in the early 2000s. Now it's the end of, you know, that decade, 2009, when FSW is starting up. What was your thoughts in terms of the progression that Gallo made in that, you know, 8-9 year time frame?
Well, it's really hard to compare because on that first show, if I remember correct, you only did that one Vegas Extreme show, correct?
Yeah. I think I saw you a couple other times at like other things up there, but yeah, it
was CAC just or something. So yeah. The thing was, other than not tagging in Boom Boom Kamini, at that point, Gallo was, you know, quieter than he is now, less outspoken. You know, so it was kind of like, hey, how are you? Hello. That was about it. And it was kind of difficult to say what skill level this guy was at in a one-on-two matchup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, but at that point, we had heard good things. You know, he was wrestling in Japan, and we'd always been tight with that Arizona crew. So, you know, at that point, Gallo and Nykerk were kind of working together in the IZW stuff, I believe. Or actually, exactly that was when EXW, right?
Yep, EXW. We just started that.
So they were starting their own company in Phoenix, and we had our thing. And back then, we had far less local talent to rely on. So, you know, using Gallo and using Nykerk, because Nykerk was like basically our top heel. We put Nykerk, Gallo, and
Modest
together as the elite extremists off their EXW name. And, you know, to this day, Cutthroat Cody will always remember when we had the Mempho Mofo on the show and he had that 4-on-1 beatdown inside the Silver Nugget.
I felt so bad. You made us kick that kid's ass.
And I like how you say we made it. It was like I had no knowledge of it. Mike Modest obviously wanted to have the young kid taught a lesson. And I'm pretty sure it was you guys deciding to do it.
Dude. But I didn't know, you know what?
Until years later.
You know what? I'll give Cody this. That kid took it. And did not complain. We didn't beat him up. But I mean, he earned it that night, and he took it like a man, and then thanked us afterwards. And he's been Cody's a trooper. Cody now is, yeah, that's another story, man. That's a guy that went from nothing to 360 degrees different.
Yeah,
all because you made us whoop his ass, Joe. All because
you turned Cody into what he is today.
Only took a little bullying.
What was that like for you, Gallo, in terms of, here you've got a new startup that you guys are doing. Here you have a new startup that Joe's doing. And you're paths are crossing. Is that something that was, exciting for you guys to work with a guy like Joe who had a lot of desire and a lot of passion? And how was it for you guys starting your stuff? Was it going well? What was, you know, the story of kind of when everything starts blending together a little bit?
Well, I'll start off with saying it was a real exciting time. Honestly, that was a real exciting time. Like, we had just basically all left IZW, and me and Nykerk and Joe's business partner had all decided to go form this new company. out of the blue. Like, there was other stuff that led into it, but that's another story for another day. But at the end of the day, we decided to start this thing up, and they had a good opportunity. And through the course of, we started doing really good shows, and we were like bringing in like Tommy Dreamer, and we had a lot of hungry guys that weren't being used anywhere else. It was kind of like Joe was about to start. There wasn't a big talent pool, like he was saying, out here. So there was like some of us, and the people that were out in this area were the drizzling shits, to say, like, that's to say it nicely. So like, we brought in people too. And a lot of the people we brought in, some came from Vegas. So we wound up, and then Joe and Dykirk had always kept communication, I think. And then they started talking, and they, it just sprung out that after a couple of our shows, Dykirk's like, hey, we got this show up in Vegas. He wants to bring us in, and it's going to kind of be like, if not a partnership, we're going to kind of like, you know, we use their guys, they're going to use us, and we're going to have a good, you know, it's a good thing, you know? And so we started doing their shows, and it was exciting because they had a lot of good talent. They, like you said, like, it was just like us. They were bringing in people from everywhere because there was nobody out here that was any good or safe or anything. So they brought in like the Young Bucks and Kenny King and us and Modest, and me and Modest were teaming up in Oregon at the time. We had been the tag champions up there. So it was a lot of fun. It was like a bunch of good brothers just getting together to hang out. And Joe's giving us this platform to start kicking ass. And after that first Sweatbox show, when he started getting like it was the Golden Nugget, right? Or the Silver Nugget that you got,
Joe? No, the very first show was at the Rancho Swap Meet. That's
no, what I mean, after the Sweatbox show. After
Silver Nugget.
So yeah, then he's like real quick, he gets into the Silver Nugget. And then we start doing these shows. And the first thing you walk up is, you come into the building, and there's a shit ton of people there. There's this giant FSW sign that you're walking out that they had handmade. That was awesome. It was just a cool, because out here in the Southwest, up until like us and him, there hadn't really been that kind of people really trying to run something big.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was just trying to run the next show and go to the next week and take their little $300 that the promoter made and go do whatever. You know, nobody was actually trying to do anything big. We had to go to California to UPW back in the day to do stuff. So it was exciting and it was fun. And I was looking forward to a good series of shows with a lot of the guys, because we used a lot of their guys in Phoenix, like Kid Vegas, Cutler Wright, and Remy Marcel. And a lot of them, when they were first coming up, were coming down and doing our shows. And it was just a really good time, you know, like everybody was learning, and I was fired up at that time. That was when I was in my prime. That was when I was in my, I was a whippersnapper, let me tell you.
You know, I used to think I had a good mullet. The hair that Dallo had back then, forget about it.
Well, I was, sometimes I had to, my mouth would write me some checks that it was hard for my ass to cash, but it was a good learning experience. But I was fired up. I was trying to be the best, you know, that was the thing. Both companies had a lot of guys in it that were trying to be the best at what they wanted at what they were doing. You know, everybody wanted to do match of the night. Everybody wanted to do something, you know, to top the next one. And it was a good learning. It was a good time.
Exciting. Well, Woody wasn't looking to have match of the night, but that's all right.
Woody was just looking to make it through the match. Yeah. I didn't say everybody was trying to have.
Okay. I misunderstood.
A lot of people were just along for the ride, but Woody looked like $1 million.
Yes, absolutely.
And he was a hell of a nice guy.
Very nice guy.
Very nice guy.
That's what we can say about his wrestling abilities.
Very nice guy.
Joe, during this time period when, you know, you're bringing him in for these first shows and kind of formulating the company, how did you see the role that Gallo played in the early FSW time period? What did you envision for these guys?
Well, as I am today, a very, very big fan of factions and groups, they were running FSW. It was three of the top heels. It was Modest, Gallo, and Dykirk. Dykirk was, you know, the number one contender for the heavyweight championship. Modest and Gallo, they were in the finals of our ladder match to crown the very first champions, which also had the Commandos in there. And the only local team that we had was Legacy and Funny Bone. Mm. And you know, and then the Von Dooms, who were like a lucha team out of SoCal. So, you know, they were from all over. And their role was to really, you know, destroy people. And, you know, we were at that time, we had Nykerk working into a feud with Kenny King. So, you know, for a year, everything was great. You know, we had actually had planned on, after Kenny held the belt, so this is over a year, so these guys have all been around the entire time. Nykerk was scheduled to actually win the heavyweight championship on that one show. And then because of issues that are still clouded to this day, we had to switch it over to Modest. There's a lot of different stories of what occurred and what happened. You know, Gallo would know better than me. There was the rumors that, oh, there was a coup and they didn't want to come down.
I was at work.
No, I remember you telling me, and I remember with the Nykerk thing, but then word got out later, and that's... And
somehow, your business partner made me catch all the heat. Your business partner made me catch all the heat. I took all the heat for that. That was an interesting time. Yeah, that... I was at work, Joe.
Yeah, those guys worked over at Toby Keith, and I remember the situation and being on the phone, and... I believe I was at a Chipotle with one of the guys who was editing for us. And all of a sudden I got the text from Nykerk like, hey, bro, we can't get out of work. We're not going to be there tomorrow. And it's like, what the fuck? It was like 8 o'clock at night on, you know, Friday night and the show's on Saturday. Jeez. And then we had to, you know, scramble because at the time me and Modest were working at Cheetah's and we were figuring things out. And it was like, Modest didn't want the belt because we were future stars of wrestling. But there wasn't a fresh face that was ready to take that, especially as a heel, because the only other heel was Modest. Gallo and Nykerk were the number two and three heels. So we weren't going to put it on Ryan Castellucci.
let me explain my side of the story since we're going into this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's hear it, brother.
I'd like to hear it.
I had told Modest, because I didn't have Joe's number, a week before then or 2 weeks before then, that I didn't think I was going to get out of work. At the time that we were doing this, okay, there was a company that started called Toby Keith's. I don't know if you remember the bar and grill. There's still the one at Harris in Vegas.
Yep.
The guy that I worked for, who ran all – he owned all of them in all the states. And me and Nykerk were like his right-hand men, okay? It doesn't matter that that guy is now in jail for $42 million of embezzlement and being a mobster – and for being in the witness relocation program, for being the number one crime family witness in history. That's another story. But yeah, we were working for this guy, and we brought in national acts. We were bringing like Jason Aldean and Toby Keith and Gretchen Wilson and everything else. And it happened to be that the night of his show was a concert. And since Nykerk and I were the two main security heads for the entire company, and we had to be in charge of the executive protection and everything else for the shows, I took the hit and I told Modest I wasn't going to be able to make it, because that way Nykerk and the business of Tyson Tyler can make it out there. Well, somehow that got lost in the translation. And then, yeah, the Nykerk and Tyler called out the day before, and then I guess another guy like Andrew Hellman in SoCal couldn't make it, so they all happened at the same time, and somehow I caught the heat for it that it was like an EXW coup, because of course it happens to be all EXW guys that don't show up. And I wound up getting, I remember Modest calling me and telling me that I was getting canned, and I'm like leaving the gym getting ready to go to work for the thing, or this was like a couple days after it, I think, and I was like, and I remember going, first of all, Mike, how do you fire me from an independent promotion? I'm just curious. You mean you're just not going to book me anymore? Don't say fired. Come on now. There's no contract. I always thought that was funny, Joe. But he tells me this, and I go, why am I getting the heat for this? And he told me, he goes, everybody didn't show up and this and that. And I go, dude, I told you a week before. And he goes, I don't know, man. I don't know. And I'm like, so I got really pissed. And then that caused a lot of heat for a long time, because if I get pissed and I feel like I'm sliding, I'll make sure everybody knows it.
So
but seriously, I really I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything that was going on. I was at work. I didn't know they didn't go to it. I didn't know anything about that until I got the phone call from Modest. I did not know they didn't go to the show. You know, it wasn't like today. This was still a few years ago. It wasn't like Facebook and everything was really that up to date. You know, people weren't on it every second of every waking minute of the day like it is now, you know?
Yeah.
So like show results would sometimes take 24 hours to come in. So I didn't, and I was busy working at a concert. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know anything about it until the next day or 2 days later, something like that. I think it was the next day. So
how long did the heat last in terms of, you know, affecting you and relationship with FSW?
Well, it didn't help that when I did the CAC show at FSW and Concussion pissed me off in the middle of the match because he started fucking around. I caused another,
So
this is one of the times that my mouth caught me a lot of trouble.
So here's the story. So we're not really talking. We see each other at the CAC once in a, you know, every year. It's just like, hey, that was about it. So we were doing the show at FSW for the CAC.
Right.
And I remember, you know, we're having to book all these people, a lot of them we didn't know and things like that. But I always knew that Gallo was always at the CAC. You know, he was always there. And I wasn't going to let what was perceived as a personal beef and be like, oh, no, you know, I'm not the other guy who's running it now who, you know, refuses to use our guys because we have beef. So I'm like, okay, we're going to book Gallo and Dom in a tag match. And at the time, Mike James was working our shows and Concussion. And Con was involved as a heel with Sin Bodhi. So I told Gallo and Dom that they needed to be the faces in the match because our local fans knew them as the heels.
Okay.
So after the match, it came back to me because we had a seminar with Raven the next day that Mike James stuck around to. And basically he was like, well, what are you supposed to do when the veteran guys basically tell you after the promoter said, no, you're going to be the heel faces and we're going to be the heels. So that's all I got of it because I wasn't talking to Gallo at the time. So
that's not even what happened either.
But that's what he said. He said, you told them that you were going to be the heels and they were going to be the faces. So that's the only story I heard. So, of course, now this motherfucker, I put him on the show again, and now he fucking switches everything up.
No, that give me that pencil, dog. I'm changing the booking. No, the thing was, is we were at that time, especially that match, we were wearing our Chris Benoit tights, which meant we had to wrestle. And me and him were really big at that time because we've been working with Nykerk and Val a lot, doing a lot of like MMA style work shoot matches, like really mixes. We're doing a lot of wrestling.
Sure.
And it wasn't anything like we were trying to be the heels. We were just being aggressive, and Khan wanted to do all this flippy shit. And I'm like, dude, you're a heel. You're not supposed to do flippy shit. So if we're wrestling, you got to be a heel and be vicious. Like, why would you do flippy shit? And he didn't even tell me really this till like we're in the middle of the match. I'm locking up with him, and I just take him down. I remember, and I put him in a thing. And I'd already told him we were going to be wrestling, so he'd be mean. And he starts trying to do these weird flips and stuff in the middle of this stuff. And I'm working. I'm wrestling. So I just keep taking him to the ground, and I just keep doing. I'm like, what are you doing? And he starts going, I can't do my flippy shit when you're doing that. And I'm like, bro, you're a heel. Cut me off and beat the shit out of me. Why the fuck are you trying to do flippy shit? And then I just remember being on the outside of the ring and I went to shoot him in. And he literally stopped. Stopped. I shot him at something and he stopped and put his hands on the mat, looked at me and goes, that's not the fucking spot. And I lost my shit. And at that point, they were no longer the heels because I proceeded to start beating the living shit out of him.
Oh, Jesus.
He looked like an idiot.
Oh, my God.
And then I went to the back and I made a big issue in the alleyway because I threatened to whoop his ass back there too because I was so pissed. And it was very, I will admit now, and I will say I'm sorry, Joe, again, I was very unprofessional to me, but at that time I was really fired up. I was at a time in my life where, like, I was really trying to do many things at once. I'm trying to run this company, and I'm trying to help in a wrestling promotion in EXW, trying to make that big. So I'm running a 17 stores trying to open up across the country. I'm trying to help EXW run. And then at the time, I'm back here at FSW for the first time and in a long time. And, well, actually, this time I think EXW was done. So me and Dom were just working everywhere trying to get signed to WWE or go to Japan again. And there wasn't, like, there was a whole lot of opportunities out there in, like, right. 2000. This is, like, 2011, wasn't it? Like, there was – it was very limited opportunities. And
yeah, 2000. Yeah, because we were at the school till about 2012, and I think it was the year before. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I was really fired up trying to make a name. You know, I just got back from Germany, my first trip to Germany, and here's this guy, and he's just like, and I'm just used to, like, going out there and working. You know what I mean? Like, not even really calling a lot of shit, just going out there and working.
Yeah. I'm
just working with guys like Val Venus and guys like Nykirk and going to Germany and work with guys like Dan Collins and guys that you might call a couple spots, but you just go out there and worst comes worst, you're just working, man. Like, you're just working and you're working hard. And I was having a fun time doing that. And then he does that. And it pissed me off so bad. So, 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 so bad. And it didn't help that the announcer announced us as Purple Midnight when we're wearing all our entire gear, which now being who I am now, I wish I'd have been like that because I'd have just started laughing in the ring now that that had happened, but it made me so mad then. And I don't know. It was just a very temperamental time. I wasn't exactly in the right state of mind.
Sure.
A lot of stuff going on, but it was very unprofessional. But sometimes that needs to happen. I still stick by that. Sometimes there needs to be somebody to say, you're being a fucking idiot and you did some stupid shit and I'm going to whoop your ass. Like, sure. Who stops in the middle of a match with a TV camera right on you and says, that's not the fucking spot. I'm sorry. I thought we were trained professional wrestlers and we can work to a spot or we can work into something. Or if something doesn't go right, we can work around it. I didn't know that it had to be strictly choreographed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Like, that's not how I was ever trained. And up until that time, that made me somebody that I'd worked with Con a lot. And he had never been like that before. Like, I had gone 20, 30 minutes with him on the fly. And I have no idea why all of a sudden now he had to do all this. And what's worse is he's doing all this flippy shit. And then in the back, he goes, brother, my back's – he wanted to do a flip. He had this big flip out of the ring and everything, and he did it. And I remember then in the back – or before the show even started, he told us he wanted to do all these flips. And then I go, okay, I'm going to back bump you then with something real easy. And he goes, oh, my back, bro, I'm hurt. I can't do any kind of back bumps. I was like, so I was already irritated on that too. There's like a lot of other things that were in this now that I remember. But I was like, but you can do giant flips out of the ring. You want to flip out of the ring on us, but I can't give you a clothesline.
Wow.
So at the end of the night, it exploded. And I'm in the alleyway kicking a dumpster saying, I wish this was your head. And it was just very... Dom's going, bro, stop. And I'm like, fuck them and fuck this. So, yeah. Sorry, Joe. I was a bad kid, man. Man, why'd you put up with me?
I don't know. So then if you want to fast forward, you know, despite everything like that, Gallo's still on my Facebook friends page. You know, he's still, you know, we were still Facebook friends. And he would make some posts, and I would like them, and I'd make some posts, and he would like them. And we sort of were like-minded at how the newer generation of wrestling was coming about and how people acted. And I'm a professional wrestler, and it's like you've had 2 matches and you work at Target. So you're not a fucking wrestler. You're a Target employee. You can't come to training because you got to go to work. So if you really wanted to be a professional wrestler, do you want to be a greeter at Walmart? You know, it's fine if you do, but you can't use that as an excuse to why you don't train. And I don't know when it was or where it was. It might have been the CAC where we talked a lot more. And then because Dom was always the quiet one, but I would talk to Dom for 30, 40 minutes at a time whenever I would see him at the CAC bullshitting because Dom's a super nice guy. You know, Remy loves Dom. So it's like, hey, what about working with these guys? What about working with these guys? And then also now with Hammerstone and Graves as instilled as they are in FSW, you know, it actually became, you know, a good idea that we had now that Gallo was the hellhound instead of the GQ, you know, centerfold. You know, he was really good to bring in as that third guy because there were times where Hammerstone couldn't make some shows because now all of a sudden he had his commitment to MLW. I remember we actually used Dom in a Survivor Series type match because Hammerstone was in Japan. So, and ever since then, you know, it's been all good.
Yeah, well, when I came back finally, it was when I got a hold of you because I wanted to come watch your show when I was in Vegas for an archery competition. And you asked me if I wanted to, out of the blue, if I wanted to be on it. And then you had me work Kevin Cross.
Kevin Cross, yeah. And it ended up being a really, really good match.
That was a hell of a match. That was when I first met Kevin. And afterwards, I was like, this kid's going to be $1 million. I go, this kid. And I remember telling him, I go, you just keep doing what you're doing. You're going to make it. And now look at the guy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, I remember when he told me when he signed his first Lucha Underground contract. And I was like, you keep going. You're going to make it. Now he's fucking this NXT superstar. Look at this guy. Look what you did, Joe.
I know. It's amazing. Chris Bay, Hammerstone. Look at all these guys I've turned into stars. See, if you would have hung around, you would have been in the big time. You know,
well, I could have been the big time. Now I'm hope. No, you know, that was never what I ever really wanted. I always wanted to be I just wanted to wrestle long enough to be able to make a name for myself, to get into a training school or become an agent or something. That's always been my ultimate goal in wrestling, but. Beating the hell out of people as the hellhound in the ring is definitely a fun story.
Do you enjoy right now the opportunity that you get to share that knowledge, your 20 years of experience with the younger guys, and especially with how different it is now in terms of the young kids just wanting to do flippy shit or wanting to, you know, just be on TV or... You know, back when you started, you took your bumps and you took your lumps and you took the shit paydays and you put in so much time and effort. And now there are kids who are willing to do that. But at the same time, guys like you are needed to steer those kids who have the right attitude in the right direction. Is, you know, how have things been for you at this phase of your life?
I can honestly say, especially since we got to since Dom opened the training center, we've been training kids there. Like, and honestly, ever since, even then, and Joe could even tell you that I was always one. If somebody came up and stopped to ask me about something they could do in a match, I always enjoyed taking the time out to explain to them how to do it better or what I think they should do. Like, and I always try to tell them to limit their flippy shit. Like, not that I say, like, not to do it. I always try to tell them there's a time and a place for it. And you don't need to do every – like, you make people accustomed to that, and that's all they're going to expect out of you. And that's right. How you shorten your career. But if you save it for the right time and place, like, maybe bust a little bit out here and there, and then in, like, a bigger show, say, like, when he would do, like, the Sam's Town, that, and there's, like, 800 people in the crowd – well, then you bust it out there because now it means something. Those bumps mean something. It's in front of a lot more people that are going to remember it, you know? I really enjoy helping guys out now. Like, it's very fulfilling, actually. Like, I've always enjoyed that aspect of it in general. I've always enjoyed teaching. I've always enjoyed the helping agent matches in the back and make it make sense. And I've always enjoyed watching the match go on and then get the reaction that I thought they could get, if not better, when they really get into it and watching them then start going on. And from there, it's a lot of fun. And like, I did, honestly, I got to say, like, you guys were talking about Maserati and them earlier. I said this when I went to Joe's show the other day. You know, this last year has been crazy with COVID, obviously. Show's not going on and just everything all whacked out. And I got the opportunity to actually just go to Joe's show a couple weeks ago. And I just showed up. I drove up there with class, one of our students. And,
yep.
And I got to watch something. He's got so much. There's all new talent in FSW since the last time I was there. It's like everything's changed. And I was talking to a lot of guys. It was great seeing Remy and them. And then I saw Maserati and Bugatti. And they're like, I had to pull them aside and be like, man, you two are completely different from the last time. You're not doing anything different, but what you're doing is different. I was like, there's so much more confidence in you guys. Like, they're so much more confident when they're out there. Like, when they walk out, you can just see it, that they're like, they found it.
Right.
And getting better with every show. And it's a good time. I like it now. Like, and I always tell these guys, I go, you guys don't understand how blessed you really are at this time. In the sense that when Wife was first coming up, and like Joe said, Vegas was so commissioned. I got that show I did with Joe where Nab broke his leg. That was an exhibition show.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't be pro wrestling in Vegas without light being licensed.
Right.
And there was no opportunities. Like, there was UPW in California. And yeah, like you said, there were some shitty shows in Arizona. And there, you know, you really had to go long and far to find decent work. And now there's a show every weekend, you know, even during now with the times of COVID, there's still shows going on around the country that are easy to get on. And it's not like it used to be. It was really hard. And to get into an area used to be very difficult because all the talent there had it tied up. Right. Like, it took me 10 years to get into Northern California.
Yeah.
And now it's like a lot of people just go and just get bookings up there. You know, it's they are very lucky in the sense that there are promoters like Joe and being able to run shows and give them a big platform to be on, even if they don't have a fight TV or they don't have a TV access, before you'd be doing all these random shows in the middle of a small town and taking all these bumps, like you said, but nobody would ever know about it.
Yeah.
And to try to get seen, you're out there with a video camera, you know, a big clunky VHS, and you're trying to send tapes off every week to hopefully get a booking. And you might go one match a month, you know, back there for a while. And now you can literally, these kids can work every weekend. There's training schools you can go to. You can come train at our school and then go train at FSW in Vegas. And then if you go to California, there's 30 other schools. When as a couple years ago, you know, there wasn't that opportunity.
Yeah.
It was very likely you'd have to go take a seminar in Oklahoma and drive all the way out there to do it because there was nothing going on out here. So like, I always tell people to be very thankful of that kind of stuff because they don't know. And I know now from running shows and stuff, like, and not at the level that Joe does every month, or he was before COVID, they don't know what goes into running a big show like that. There's a lot of working parts and there's a lot of money involved. And to get on a show like that and to actually get a payday and to work yourself up into a higher pay bracket, it's something to really be thankful for.
Yeah.
You know, because again, there's not a lot of opportunities like that. And now there is. And it's better to be on one like Joe's where there's a lot of stuff going on. You meet good people. You get worked with advanced guys. You're in a big stage setting. You're getting noticed on the internet. That's something to be thankful for now because it wasn't like that back in the day.
Yeah.
I remember guys used to have to send me they would send me a VHS tape when we were doing the Vegas Extreme. Yeah. And it was crazy.
Yeah, you know how much money and postage every week I'd be out sending out tapes and everything like that?
Yeah. Man,
it was expensive back in the day to get yourself booked.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's it's amazing the evolution of technology and what it's been able to do for the business and for people getting seen. Joe, what does go ahead.
I was going to say, as shitty as Facebook is, because it really is, other than promoting wrestling, it's like, it's dreadful to be on here.
The dregs of society.
Everything is so negative, but it's the easiest way for me to get in touch with Gallo. It's the easy, you know, Twitter, it's different with those messages. Facebook, you just hit a button and you can have a 30-minute conversation. It's so simple. So Facebook's great with that, but my God, it's pitiful.
Yeah, the adventure, like no internet back when we started. Remember that? Like now you can just send a YouTube link and you can watch it. Like,
shit, it was MySpace when I used to first start trying to hit people up.
Yeah, MySpace. MySpace was the best. That needs to come back.
Well, I heard Justin, I remember a few years ago, I saw a thing that Justin Timberlake bought it, and I thought, oh, maybe they make a return, but it never did anything.
No. It was the best. Nobody was trying to get in anybody's else's shit. They were just trying to write HTML and make their page look cooler than everybody else's.
Yeah. Yeah. And Joe, do you remember with the videotapes how much fucking time that shit took? Because I remember casting when I was casting And I had to go through all these submissions of videotapes, put it in, watch, you know, 30 seconds and go, no fucking way. Take it out, put another one in. And it just fucking took all day to fucking watch shit.
You think that took all day? Imagine having to hook two VCRs up together and having to stop one and hit the other so you can put another match on it.
Yeah.
That was old school editing.
Yeah.
Oh, pause. Put the other one in. Get that angle. Hit record again.
You know, there was one video I will always remember. I got this video sent in by a guy. I can't remember his name. But from what I understood, he ran a company in SoCal in probably, you know, 2000-ish. And he had a match against Frankie Kazarian. And at the time, Frankie Kazarian was one of the best-known indie guys out of California. And I'm watching this match, and I'm like, wow, yeah, Kazarian's really good. Because you didn't see that much back then because there wasn't a lot of tape on people. Right. I was like, wow, this guy's really good. And I'm watching this other guy who was basically boring as fuck. And then, like, he ended up rolling up Kazarian because it was his company and won. And it was just like, you immediately saw, it's just like, wow, this guy is not even near the level. Like, Kazarian couldn't even make him look that good. He looked okay at best, but he was like their champion because of the thing. And that's why I've always had a problem. When we started FSW, there's a lot of guys that were local that complained about us bringing in all this outside talent. And I always specifically remember a guy saying to me, well, why do you bring in the Reno scum? And I said, because they're better than you. I said, if I bring in guys that are worse than you, then shoot me now. Because the bottom line is, and people confuse it, we're a wrestling company based in Vegas. We're not a Vegas wrestling company. And that's why we've been able to be bigger and better than everybody else, because we strive to be the best. We don't strive to, oh, okay. Initially, the tag team champions, they were never from Vegas because right. We didn't have anybody till they were ready. When they became ready, then they were tag team champions. You know, and it was the same thing. Kenny King, he was the local superstar, but it was going to be Nightkirk. It ended up being Modest, which went into Franco D'Angelo, you know. And we had different guys, you know, get the titles that were out of state because – we consider them local guys. Like to this day, you know, Hammerstone and Graves are more local than 90% of my locals. Yeah. Like they'll go out of their way. They do things for us they don't have to do, especially Hammerstone. You know, Hammerstone is at a level where it may not say WWE, but he's as big as you're going to see on the indie circuit, where he's making good money to go elsewhere. And he still takes the drive from Arizona for way more minimal pay because he appreciates that Joe took him when he was a baby in the business and provided him with great opportunities and matches against, you know, other national superstars to really get him noticed. The Impact tryout where he got a match on Impact because we pushed for him, you know, and he's forever been grateful. And here's a guy who has no training in Las Vegas, just a company that used him often. So.
Yeah. Gallo, what was the turn for you in terms of going from the pretty boy into, you know, this monster character? Did you, when you kind of evolved into the character, is it just an evolution of yourself, or, you know, was it something that you kind of fell into because of some of the other guys that you were around?
No, it was an evolution of myself. I had already kind of been like being called the Hellhound and stuff like that before, but I was still, me and Dom were still the basic, you know, keepers. We were still wearing the trunks and everything else. And then I wound up taking some time off, you know, I went and did a at the beginning of every year, usually I have like a couple jobs I go to that I get paid really well for. So it's my time to take off and kind of revamp, you know, usually catch my breath.
Yeah.
And this time when I was doing it, it just so happened that I had done an angle with Dom where we had split. And I kind of wanted to reinvent myself, and it wasn't even supposed to be what it was. I actually envisioned more of like a Hellraiser type character.
Okay.
And it just naturally turned into this. And it, to me, it's the easiest thing I've ever done because it just seems very natural to me. I go to do Joe's shows, and I remember first time I had shown up there as the Hellhound when he had me come out and do something. And I think he had me attacked. I came out as a special match against Sepha. The first time they'd seen me in a while.
Yeah, because Hammerstone and Graves were feuding with them, and they didn't want to have anything to do with them.
Yeah, and I remember I hadn't been in Vegas for a little while, and I didn't even know how I had been doing it in Phoenix, and I remember not even knowing how I was going to. And this is how I kind of knew I'd be able to really do it anywhere.
Right.
And I remember I walked out, and I heard the entire crowd, which I didn't think anybody at FSW would even remember me. And I heard them just start whistling. I heard a couple people go, "Hellhound." And I heard a couple other people doing it. And then I remember doing the howl, and everybody did it with me. And I was like, "Ah, yeah, this is the greatest gimmick ever, and it's going to go great here."
I mean, Joe, is very natural. Yeah, Joe, is that something when you see, you know, his evolution to this type of character? Is it nice to have someone who can kind of come in and be like a Bruiser Brody, you know, for, you know, a special attraction?
I thought Berserker when I saw it.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, I love it so much because of that. It's that old school feeling. And it's something that I came up with. I came up watching Bruiser and all that. You know, that's what I got taught. Me and Nav were the classic Native American tag team. Everything was always a character.
Yeah.
And I tried, you know, for a long time I was just myself. And I think that's what Gabriel Gallo was. You know, me and Dom, we were ourselves. This allows me to, I think that's why I like it so much. And it was so easy to evolve is because I don't have to be myself. I can be a character. And I get to be what I really like, that Bruiser, a monster. You know, there's not a lot of monsters out there. Everybody tries to be a monster or tries to be a big guy in wrestling. And they just don't get it. You don't have to be a real monster.
Right.
And nobody gets that. And it's very fun. I like it. It's very easy. And I actually think it's probably more myself and me than the me trying to be me before.
Yeah. As we wrap up, Joe, is there anything that stands out to you about your relationship with Gallo and what he's meant to FSW and what he continues to mean to you?
Well, once we got him back into the fold, you know, you got to understand with Hammerstone and Graves, when we put them together, Graves turning on Sepha, you know, there were two beloved guys. And by adding Gallo to the mix, it really solidified their heel stuff for a while. Unfortunately, Gallo had a lot of stuff going on, and I remember trying to book him a few different times after the fact, and he just had other stuff going on. And but between that and then Hammerstone going to Japan and then Graves being injured, we never really got to see that faction where they should have been. Because at the point we had it, it was like Hammerstone and Graves were tag champs. Hammerstone was the Nevada State champ. Graves was the heavyweight champ. We really wanted that group to run wild. And when things were supposed to work out, it was going to be the Freebird rule. So it would have been Gallo and Hammerstone. It could be Gallo and Graves. And he was good as the third dynamic in case one of those other guys couldn't come. But the problem was Gallo wasn't able to come either. So, you know, it's disappointing that fact that so much time elapsed without us not doing things, because I can genuinely believe that we both really like each other. We both have similar thoughts of the business and we love the business, but we don't want to see people shit on the business. So in the locker room, he would have been a great guy to have for 10 years when Hammerstone and Graves were coming out from day one.
Yeah.
Wow, that was like the I feel all giddy inside. That was like the nicest thing Joe's ever said to me.
Well, yeah, I say nice things once in a while.
Yeah, that wound up running into that time of the year where I do my big events. Like I wind up working, you know, I make a lot of money doing stuff for like Barrett Jackson and everything. I do liquor sales for them and everything. So I wind, you know, in their inventory. So I'll say that I have a whole side job that I do during that time. And it's my break and I go make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it just ran into that time. And unfortunately at that time, especially in my, I'm not 20 years old anymore trying to wrestle. I'm in my 40s. So now I do it mainly to help people along and have a good time. And when it comes down to the fact that I can make thousands of dollars not bumping.
Yeah.
And all it takes is a couple months out of my wrestling time and stuff. I wind up doing that. And sometimes it winds up coming afoul of things like this. But at this point in my life, you know, you never know. I could take one bad bump and not be able to work. I'd like to be able to have a couple $1,000 in the bank to in case that happens. And then unfortunately, like he said, that happened. And then it ran straight into COVID.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's literally like, cause I've usually gone January through March and unfortunately it, even that ended in February, because we all know by the second week of March, everything was locked down.
Yeah.
You know, so the last show I did, I think with Joe had been in what, November of last year or October. Joe,
I'm pretty sure it was Survival of the Fittest when it was you, Dom, and Graves.
Yeah, and then after that,
Hammerstone couldn't be there against Sepha, Bay, I believe.
Yeah,
and Shogun. Yeah. So, and again, that was some good young talent right there. You know, Bay and now it's Sepha and Shogun. Those are guys that, you know, we look forward to hopefully seeing in the big stage. But, you know, one guy that we've got out of their school is Class. You know, to me, this guy is a
very good
being in FSW. He doesn't have a lot of time in the business, but he gets it. And obviously he's been trained well. And he's a guy who, you know, after a couple of shows, it was like, okay, here's a guy we really need to push hard, because, you know, he looks like $1 million. You know, he can talk, he can work, you know. In all honesty, I've been wanting to talk to Dom, because we did have a presence in Arizona for a while. And nowadays there's a lot of companies working together and having the great relationship. And they have Hammerstone, Graves, Gallo, Dom there that we're all close with. You know, let's take over Arizona and kill them all, you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, let's do a joint show. Let's do something where we can get our foot back into that. You know, we have the access because our production right now is top notch. So that's what we can bring to the table for, you know, their company, and working together and getting a little more exposure to them on our Twitch. And, you know, because we're looking at doing a lot of different things. Like, yeah, our Twitch shows are going to be on there all the time. But we're also looking for some of the independent companies that we are friendly with that maybe don't have their own platform to have their shows aired on our Twitch channel until they get something up and running. And now when we decide to try to do something in Utah because of MK and Arizona and Southern California, you know, there's a built-in base of some fans, and then hopefully we can help grow it.
Yeah. Gallo, you know, with that in mind, as we finish up, where do you see the future going for what you guys are doing in Arizona, and could FSW have maybe a little pathway to linking up and, you know, helping put you guys on the map and helping to expand their product?
Well, I'm sure it's gonna happen. It's just right now in Arizona, obviously with COVID, there's not really anything going on. Like the scene's crushed right now. Like there's no venues booking. There's like one company actually trying to run and they're drawing 10 people. Like you can't, you know, with all the restrictions right now, we're not even thinking about anything like that. Our job right now is getting guys like Class ready so they can go to FSW and have that platform to work. So like once everything opens up again, I'm sure that will happen. Like, we're not planning on any shows right now just because, like, we can't, you know.
Yeah.
We did one show the other day, and it was a benefit show for the Bearded Villains for the Phoenix Children's Hospital. And that was the first, and the whole reason it happened is because they got it, the 401c got it. Hopefully, you know, and then the next week they start, this week they start talking about shutting down everything.
Yeah, and, right.
You know, like I guess like schools are closing out here again. And so now, like, we're getting ready for the fight as of, if anybody's seen Dom's, we're not shutting down. We're keeping our school open. So right now our whole thing is that we're just going to keep training guys, get guys like Class ready to go do Joe's shows so that he could utilize them properly. And they, and he has a, he knows that he can get talent from us that when it gets to them, they're moldable and they're coachable.
Right.
And very well trained so that he knows that he can use them at any time. Again, once everything starts running, I'm sure there's going to be joint shows. I'm sure there's going to be FSW and Phoenix Championship Wrestling shows going on and exchanges of talent, because we love Cody on our shows and we love stuff like that. But until that happens, you know, the only thing we can definitely guarantee is that we're going to be sending guys like Class to FSW whenever they're ready, whenever Joe has a spot, because it's a big opportunity for both of us at that level too, because he gets to utilize and shape talent that he can put his stamp on. And at the same time, it still gets our talent out there and gets them to know that our school is a viable school. And along with their FSW school, it's like we can send, the guys can go up there and do seminar. You know, there's a lot of stuff we can do.
Yeah.
You know, because not just FSW just isn't just the, everybody forgets, it's not just the company. They have a school too.
You know? Absolutely.
And I saw some of their guys at the last show. And like I said, they got good stuff going up there with like Remy and everybody teaching people there. You know, that's a, they got a good, they got a great school too. So with that, their school and our school, hopefully the future of wrestling is very bright, especially since he doesn't like shit and I don't like shit. So,
Joe, any final words this week for Gallo or about anything coming up with FSW?
Oh, well, we're looking forward to a big show on Saturday, another private event that we are running, television taping. We got Brian Pillman Jr. coming in. Love to see him work Graves or Hammerstone, obviously. Gentleman out of Atlanta, Georgia, who takes advantage of the Future Stars initiative. He goes by Tyson Maddox, a solid-looking worker, you know, big dude. You know, we've been trying to find some of those heavyweights out there, and we've been fortunate that a lot of people want to make their way out here, and they're making their way out here just for an opportunity. You know, they're taking their own flight. You know, we can't afford to bring in anybody who just wants to work with us,
yeah.
You know, and there's so many people that do, but the reason Class got in was first Dom sent me a message that Class was going to reach out to me, and you know, he's our best student, you know, put him over really, really strong. So we had talked and he was not able to make the first Future Shock. He was going to make the second one. But then Hammerstone hit me up a few days before the TV taping and said, hey, you know, is it cool if I bring Class up? And it was like, well, he's coming up anyway. Why wouldn't I utilize him? It was like, even when Gallo showed up and we didn't even know, it's like, hey, you want to work? You know, why would I want to have somebody who's better than, you know, 20 guys that are already there and not have them work? You know, Willie Mack was backstage. It's like, dude, you want to do a run-in or something? It's like, we always try to surprise and put on the best thing that we can and utilize who's ever available. So, you know, with Class, it became, well, if Dom and Hammerstone are putting their stamp of approval on this guy, he's going on the show over other guys that are just sending stuff in. You know, I generally am going to rely on my top talent guys saying, hey, why don't you check out this guy? Hey, why don't you check out that guy? And, you know, for some people, it isn't as difficult to get in FSW as it is for others. There's a lot of guys that there's so much talent out there, but there's only so many spots. But I'd rather use somebody that already has a relationship with another one of our main guys, because whether it's SoCal, whether it's Arizona, it saves on the trip. It's another guy who can get in a car, you know, gas money wise. And it makes them want to come to FSW. You know, it's kind of hard, and you know, when you're not getting paid a lot of money for a guy to drive 6 hours back and forth by himself.
Yeah.
But if he has a group of three or four, it's a road trip. You have a great time. You come to Vegas. Who doesn't like coming to Vegas? Yeah. So we've been very fortunate that some of our best talent has been through recommendations of somebody else that we're already works for. So, you know, keep it coming.
And as far as my LVTV, what is the launch of the show? Is it
Right now it is on hold. Okay. At this point, we're waiting to find out what the situation is. We have 5 episodes that we are ready to air. And if we don't air them on MyLVTV, then we're going to do a weekly show that we'll be able to put it on live at the same time on Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube. So the product will be out there. We have too many good matches that need to be seen. But mainly, my main job today is pulling the match from the CAC of the Dom and Gallo versus Mike James and Concussion. You're going to see that hopefully by tomorrow.
Oh, great. Great. Oh, I'm sure that's a classic.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's the best thing. You just, everyone who's listening, who's watching, couple things. One, we did an interview with Class. Please check it out, because Class is someone that is just fucking unbelievable, not only as a wrestler but as a person. He's as smart as anything, and he's just such a great up-and-coming talent that I urge people to
don't be saying that just because he ended up going on your show. All right.
Oh, no, I wouldn't blow the smoke up Class's ass just because he did an interview with us. But
Without a doubt, he's a tremendous talent.
Yeah.
No, that kid's got a bright future. I've been on the Class train since I first saw him a couple years ago.
Don't worry, Gallo, I'll get him there for you.
And
hey, man, that's what you're supposed to do. My job is to get him ready for you to get him there.
There you go.
And everyone watching or listening, please check out the Twitch channel for FSW and also Fight TV. If you hadn't seen the FSWW show, the women's show that took place on the 20th, buy it, man. Check it out, because it definitely was worth it for the price of only 10 bucks. You can't beat that. Keep an eye out on what is going on with Arizona's wrestling. Gallo, if you want to give a shout out to the website where people can check the school out.
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook. You can. It's under Train and AZ. The hashtag would be under anything under Train and AZ or Arizona Pro Wrestling Training Center. The website, I believe, is ArizonaProWrestlingTrainingCenter.com. If you just Google search Arizona Pro Wrestling Training Center, it'll pop up. They push that stuff out all the time. I'm not very technological or technology minded, as we were talking about earlier. So besides being able to figure out how to use Zoom, I know we also have, you know, Phoenix Championship Wrestling, which is the company that is associated that is part of the training school. But we just filled our newest class. We did a tryout a couple weeks ago, and a bunch of them are in our newest class. And then we'll have a new class signing up probably around the first of the year. So if anybody's interested in training for professional wrestling and wants to come to the thing about our training center is we're not just a pro wrestling school. We work on making them better people. Dom's very big on that. My tag partner, who's the one of the owners of it, he's very big on personal growth. So we like people to come and we're not going to just teach you flipping moves right off the bat. It's a very strict structure. You have 6 weeks of physical training before you're ever even allowed in the ring. But as everybody knows, and students will attest, and Joe can tell you, we train some killers and we put a lot of time into them and we don't let them wrestle until they're ready. So if anybody's interested in coming and learning a lot of different things and learning how to be a professional wrestler, Arizona Pro Wrestling Training Center is the place for you in Arizona. Or obviously Future Stars of Wrestling in Nevada. But if you want to come to us, like I said, we got a lot of, got Hammerstone training there. You got me teaching guys there. You got Dom teaching guys there.
Don't forget the Evan Daniels promo class every week.
Evan Daniels promo class every other week, Zoom available. But yeah, just check it out. See what we're putting out there. There's lots of stuff. We post stuff every day on our Instagram and everything.
Excellent. Well, everyone, again, I encourage you guys who are watching or listening to please, check out, if you want to be a pro wrestler, check out the training school in Arizona, or also check out FSW if you're closer to Nevada. Definitely, keep your eyes peeled for more stuff coming up, hopefully out of Arizona, once this pandemic is we can get back to normal. Yeah. So, but for now, thank you guys very much. Thank you, Gallo, for joining us. And Joe, thank you as always for allowing us to get a look into some of the stories and history of FSW. And till then, everyone, take care of yourselves, and we'll see y'all next week.